Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon. In this week's episode with my friend and two-time U.S. Open champion, Curtis Strange, is brought to you, of course, by Titleist and their new Vokey Design SM7 wedges. They're designed by master craftsman Bob Vokey, who is one of the great people in all of golf, and they are designed to improve your wedge play. Think about this for me. How many times do you have a wedge in or around the greens around? Just start to count them. And when's the last time you changed the wedge? It's probably been too long. You need to do it. And my idea is to get the new Vokey Design SM7 wedges. Their innovation provide the best performance and distance control and shot versatility and maximum spin, which we all need. And the best way to experience SM7 wedges is to hit each grind side by side during a wedge fitting. You can find the nearest fitting location on Vokey.com, or you can use their online wedge selector tool, to find the right loft, bounce, and grind for your wedges. Check that out. The Titleist Vokey Design SM7s. I just got a new set of them. They are absolutely beautiful. I got the slate black. They've got very minimal amount of stamping on them, which I'm kind of a fan of. And I don't want to stamp all over them. They're too beautiful. That's my point. And I haven't taken them out yet. I've kept them in my little closet because, you know, when you get new wedges and they don't have any of the hit marks on them, nothing like wearing, they're just beautiful. And I don't know why I'm continuing to just leave them in the closet, but I think this week's going to be the week I take them out. And there is nothing in golf like hitting a new wedge, especially if it's a Vokey. That first one you hit, it lands up there and checks and spins kind of closer to the hole, and you're like, why don't I have new wedges every week? And then you remind yourself that you probably can't afford that. But that's okay. Get some new wedges this year. Check them out at Vokey.com. Trust me, they will help your game, and make sure you get fit. If you get new golf clubs and don't get fit, you're literally giving up golf shots. Okay, we will transition to Curtis in a moment. I was doing PGA Tour Live last week for the Arnold Palmer Invitational. That golf course was tough. This golf course is going to be tough at the Players. I've decided the Florida swing, man, it'll punch you right in your stomach. You go from the Honda to Arnold Palmer to the Players and Valspar. That is four brutal golf courses in four consecutive weeks. I guarantee you the Players are like, all right, I'm out. Let's see it. Let's leave Florida as fast as we possibly can. But if you get on a heater like we're seeing with somebody like Keith Mitchell, it can be great because you know you're going to find your golf shot in the right spot. I think that's what we saw with Francesco Molinari over the weekend, one of the best ball strikers on the planet right now on a golf course that requires you to hit good golf shots and actually pays them off, which I think sometime when we see these softer golf courses, that's not always the case. So it's kind of fun to watch these 4 weeks as we approach the Masters. Here's fingers crossed that Tiger is, in fact, healthy. I don't even want him to be 100% healthy. Just give me 85 to 90% healthy Tiger, because I think we're all just waiting until we get to Augusta National, and I think we all just hope that the man is healthy when we get there. I've got some koozies, and I've got some Titleist hats I'm going to give away over the next few days. Make sure you follow the Twitter account at the Clubhouse Pod and the Instagram account at the Clubhouse Pod. That's where I'll be announcing some of the giveaways. We've got a Titleist driver to give away as well. We've got some sweepstakes. You know, I'm a sweepstakes guy. I'm going to give some stuff away over the next few days. It'll be Titleist. You'll like it. I'll throw some koozies and some Clubhouse stickers in there as well. So follow those accounts if you can. All right, let's get to the legend that is Curtis Strange. And we welcome back in the Clubhouse for the first time in 2019, and a man that is pushing back his fishing escapades for the day to do this. Curtis Strange, I always appreciate it when you and Zinger do a podcast instead of going out super early and fish. Is this like a weekly thing? Are you doing this every day when you're home?
This is a daily thing, 5 days out of seven. It's what I do. You know, I play a little social golf. I fish a lot, and I enjoy getting outside.
So you say you play social golf. I mean, are you still go out there and play a couple times a week? I mean, I know it, not any sort of competitive environment or anything like that, but are you out there grinding, or is it just simply going out, playing nine holes with some friends and getting out of there, you know, at a decent time?
No, I got 30 or 40 guys, and we're grinding. We got money on the line, you know. We got a couple of bucks on the line, and nobody wants to lose, and it's fun. It's, you know, it's, I never thought I'd do this, but I actually enjoy it. I don't get as bored as I thought I would. And it's nice to go out there and then have a beer with the guys afterwards.
As a guy that, you know, won major championships and played in the biggest venues on the planet, was it a transition? Did you take, you know, 5, 6, 8, 10 years to get into the mold where, as you said, you thought you might be interested in doing something like that? Because I can only imagine the moment you decide to hang up the spikes, golf probably doesn't really sound like something you want to go do on a weekly basis. How long did it take for you to actually notice that this was something you were going to kind of enjoy?
Well, you make a good point, Shane. You do go through a transition, and it's gradually over the years. You go through the transition, I think, of playing a little bit of senior golf. Well, actually, it starts on the regular tour, on when you're not as competitive anymore. And in my case, doing TV work, playing a little bit, your priorities do change a little bit. Although you still wake up every morning as a competitor, but you realize that once you go to the booth, you can't give it 100% like you always did. And then you transition from that stage into the Champions Tour, and you know, I played for 3 or 4 years and then played sporadically after that. But you transition out. And is it a conscious effort? No, it's something you just kind of gradually do subconsciously, that you don't play well, you're tired of the grind, you're tired of the road, so you cut back each year, and then eventually you don't play anymore at all. And then you start playing a little social golf, and you know, I get bored a little bit doing that, but I still like going hitting balls by myself for an hour. And, you know, it's just, it is what it is. And I tell people all the time, and I really mean this, that we're so lucky to play this game professionally, because you can play it till you're 60 or 65 competitively.
Right.
And versus if you played other sports, you were out of your sport at an old age at 35 years old or 33 years old, unless you're an exception of the Bradys of the world and, you know, some other superstars. But I was lucky. I played competitive golf for a long, long time, and I had no problem with retiring and playing social golf at all.
Well, as much as we can sit here and talk about your current golf game, I do want to jump into some headlines that have kind of been making the rounds.
We don't want to do that, trust me.
You know, this week is very interesting to me every single year, and the noise is getting louder and louder around the Players' Championship. The Players' Championship, to me, growing up as a fan, as somebody that watched it, it was the biggest event that wasn't a major championship. And, of course, everybody talks fifth major. That's what the term has kind of lingered around it for years. What did it used to feel like for you when you would compete at Sawgrass? Because back then there wasn't new trophies and new theme songs and hashtags and all those things. It was simply an event on a calendar. What did it feel like to you and your peers when you guys got closer and closer and into the week at Sawgrass?
You know, it's the same. We all know it's a big, big championship. And the press knows it. The public feels it. The players feel it for a couple of reasons. One is that it was probably the strongest field of the year. And two is that it was always in the day the biggest purse. And back in the day when we didn't play for that much money, having a real big purse meant something, because you had a chance to, you know, fill your pockets for a week if you played well. We were on an extremely tough golf course back when we played across the road at the country club, Sawgrass Country Club. Hard, hard golf course. Wind blew its tail off every day. And then we moved across the street to this quirky, funky place in the Players. And, you know, but it's always a big event. To me, we've kind of stepped on our own toes every time we've turned around pushing the major championship label. There's not going to be a fifth major unless this thing develops on its own. You can't develop something and manufacture something, in my estimation. You have to let it happen. And just let it happen. It's a wonderful event. I still don't like the golf course, and I think a lot of players feel – the same way I do, but be that as it may, it's still a big event. It's the best field of the year. It's big TV. Let's just go play and let everything fall where they may. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You know, it's like this to me. I go back to when Duvall won the Players. I remember where I was watching that. I was in East Texas. I was at my sister's boyfriend's parents' house, and we were all huddled around a TV watching Duvall hit the shot into 17, and he was the best player in the world, which is something we didn't think was going to happen in the Tiger era. And it was unbelievable appointment viewing golf. It was what you had to be watching that week, that month. But what I've felt like with all the murmurs around it, and especially it seems like the murmurs from the people putting it on, is it's like the guy that tells you they're good at golf. hey, I'm a really good golfer. Oh, that sounds great. Can you show me? Because if you're saying you're a good golfer, there's a pretty good chance you're probably not as good as you think you are. You know, it's that whole line,
Dan,
about
it goes back to what my it goes back to what all our daddies told us years ago. You don't have to tell it. If you're good at something, you don't have to tell anybody.
Right.
Show them.
Exactly.
Show them.
And
that's exactly the point we're making. I will make damn sure I watch this weekend because it's good stuff.
Right.
It's good TV, and it always has been. I go back in the day, Raymond Floyd beat me in a playoff in 80 or 81, and I still have nightmares about it. I mean, it's a big event to the players. It's big to the public. And let's just have it like that. It's the biggest championship. It's our championship. But on the other hand now, I will say this. The argument that I do make, contrary to what I just said, is that why can't the players? Everybody else has their major, the USGA, the RNA, the Masters is an invitational. But in the PGA, why can't the players, our tour, have that one big event? Well, we do. We do have the players. Let everybody think about it, what they want to think about it. But it's a big event, and it is must-watch TV this weekend.
Absolutely. And again, that goes back to my point, is that I don't feel like I've ever needed the players to tell me what it is, because it's always been, to me, a massively important event. And if it's not a major, and that's the world I live in, I think there's four major championships. I think there always will be. And that's important to me because history – guys like you, if you add a players in the rota, don't have a chance to go out there and win one now. You know, and like Gene Sarazen can't go win a players. I mean, you know, that is to me the problem with changing the history, if you will, in that regard. And so, you know, it's great. It's going to be awesome. I think it's going to be fun to see it moved now and not in May. And I think the golf course will play a lot different. I was going to ask you, I know you've been so close to winning this event before. I love, one of my favorite things to do talking to you and Zinger and Fax and those guys is not just talking about the wins, but talking about the almosts. How?
The almost is what we think about.
That's what Steve Kerr was just talking
near
about.
Win
I know.
Is what we remember the most.
Yeah, Steve Kerr was just saying that, you know, that he still thinks about the loss to the Cavs more than he thinks about, you know, the championships they've won. And I was going to ask, when you stand as a competitor on the 17th hole as a professional on a Sunday, and every professional thinks about the miss more than probably people think. You know, they think about where to bail out, the fat part of the green, the smart play. And to me, 17 at Sawgrass is one of the few places in the world in professional golf where there is no bailout. You got to get up there and hit a golf shot.
Yeah. 17, to me, is not that hard. We try to get cute. You can't help but try to get cute because it's not very long.
Right.
But you have to be careful. It scared the hell out of me when the wind started to blow. So I try to put it right in the dead center of the green in the two putt. If it was dead calm, now you can maybe try to get a little more aggressive. What I don't like is because there's no bailout. When they try to get those greens so bloody hard, now the players don't have a shot. Because now the green plays half the size, and you can hit a pretty good shot and bounce in the backwater. I don't like that. I think it's manipulation of the golf course. But and we can make any golf course the hardest golf course in the world by just setting it up. So let them give the players a chance. You can have it firm, but give them a chance when that pin is back center to get it close and not a good shot go over in the water. That's the only problem I have with 17. But the green is quite large. If you just play the smart shot, play it where your miss is toward the middle of the green, you shouldn't have any problems. But when the wind starts to blow, which it will earlier in the year, this week, it can be a tough little son of a gun.
Oh, I mean, it's just I've played it a couple times now, and I think that your point is correct. You stand on it the first time you see it, and you go, wow, the green looks a lot bigger than you think. And I still remember the second time I played it, I went, wow, it looks a lot smaller than I think I thought last time. I think it continually gets smaller and smaller the more times you play. You go, oh, man, I don't think this is only a wedge, isn't it? This is crazy. But
you know, the older you get, the smaller it gets too. Trust me.
I can only imagine. So I don't want to put you on the spot here, Curtis. You told me an unbelievable story once about the players. You already said it's not your favorite golf course in the world. I feel like it's a golf course that when it's going bad, the best in the world can go out there and shoot 78, 79, or 80. And you were telling me a story back in the day. I think it was USA was broadcasting the early coverage. You were struggling. I think you said you were about to miss a cut. and you had a moment in the woods, and you lost your temper, and all of a sudden you turned around and you went, oh, man, they got me on cam.
No, I didn't really lose my temper. Actually, I was playing quite well. I was playing with Trevino and Watson the first 2 days, and this was Friday, I think, 14th hole, which is really a hard par four. I don't know why it's such a wide fairway for all our listeners this weekend, but it's intimidating. And so I hit the left waist area. I hit a tree out of that, ended up making triple. Well, after I hit in the waist area and hit a tree, that catcher's mitt up there threw it in the swamp deeper. I started to tell myself how much I hated myself in no uncertain terms and how much I hated this golf course and can't wait to get out of here. And I hate myself again, in case I didn't hear myself the first time, with all these colorful phrases, which we all do have.
Right.
And it got on TV. And I got a quite large fine for that one. But it was funny because the boom mic, let me tell you something about these boom mics. They can pick up a gnat farting at 50 yards. So you have to be careful on the sidelines of the game or on the sidelines of the golf tournament. And it's funny now, but it was embarrassing at the time.
Well, you were telling me that you kind of like, when you were kind of having a little bit of a moment and you turn around, you went, oh man, I didn't see that boom mic. And you just knew the fine was coming. I'm sure there were a couple moments like that where you're going, I'm just waiting for the letter.
Just give me the letter. Don't say anything to me. Don't give me a fatherly talk. Just give me the damn letter and let me pay it.
Well, and that's,
I know I've screwed up.
Yeah, that's the point. Is like, I mean, you know, there are times where the tempers get to players, and especially now with so much coverage, and it's a bad look. I mean, you can go to Sergio earlier this year. Obviously, if you're damaging greens and guys are putting on them, that's terrible. I don't like – one of the things I don't like to see, and you see it more and more now, is when a guy hits a bad bunker shot and then he replays the bunker shot and knocks a whole bunch of more sand on the green. I just feel like that's – you know, that I mean, if somebody gets in that position and they're behind a whole bunch of clump of sand, I guess now you can move it. But those are the types of things that temper gets a little in the way. But everybody's lost their temper, yeah, for goodness sakes, on the golf course.
Yeah, my gosh. It's a frustrating game. And you have to remember, it's a frustrating game. You're doing it for your livelihood on the biggest stage, for instance, this week. And there's a lot of pressure. And you've been at it this year already for 12 weeks or so. And you might be a little tired. You might be frustrated. You know, and you just kind of gets the best of you. Now, you know, today's social media, and every move you make, if you're a star, every move you make, somebody's watching. It would be tough. You know, in my day, you can make mistakes and get away with it, but now you can't. So you have to be aware that everything you do or say is going to get out there in the cyber world. And I feel for the guys, but on the other hand, you know, they're all buttoned up. They really do well. I mean, Sergio snaps once in a while, and who doesn't? But I think they're so well-behaved and so good people that golf is really lucky right now.
Yeah, it was, I did PGA Tour last week at Bay Hill, and you follow these guys around for 18 holes, and the camera's on them the entire round. And in the early part of the week, you're following the big names, and you're hoping they have a good week. And then you get to the weekend, and you're not going to follow the leaders because you've got to go a little early. And so you'll still follow big names. But what I've found very interesting is you follow the big names who are not playing well. And I love watching as a broadcaster their attitudes. You know, Justin Rose had a great moment. He hit it in the rough on, I think it was on 11 on Sunday. And we're following him, and he's not playing very well. And he hits this kind of chunk runner with the fairway wood, and it runs up to the front of the green. And, I mean, they're having the most fun they had all week about this kind of ridiculous punch-out shot. You know, when Rory's laughing about a mud ball, I agree with you. I think the attitudes on the golf course, and it's probably a little bit because they know they have to be this way, but the attitudes seem to, in certain guys, remind you why they're so good, because they get a bad break and it doesn't beat them up for the day, and they don't let that bad break ruin their week.
Well, exactly, and that's why they're consistently good. But I'll tell you something else. When you watch a guy who's not playing really well, now you see his true talent.
Exactly.
To hit that punch out with a wood, to hit the slice of the hook, the high, low, the long bunker shot, there's where the talent really shows its face. Now, you might not play well that day, but when you are all over the golf course, you might be frustrated, but you still hit these incredible shots that the average player doesn't even think about. And that's where you really see a guy's natural gift And although he might shoot 75, he's hit three or four remarkable shots in that day.
Especially on a golf course like Bay Hill. I don't remember Bay Hill being this hard. I know it was tough throughout the years, but my goodness.
It's always this hard.
Oh.
You know, it's one of those courses they've always shot low scores on at times when the weather's good, but I could never understand that because it was a long, pretty difficult golf. Now, granted, they hit it so much farther now, but in our day, it was a long golf course and could really play long when you got those cool temperatures in Orlando this time of year. But to me, Bay Hill was always a pretty doggone hard golf course, and I'm one of those that don't understand how they shoot these low scores because you really got to play really some good shots around there.
Yeah, you can't miss a golf shot. What was the golf course in your day that gave you the most fits? You know, it was on the schedule, and when you got there, you're thinking, man, this is going to be a long 4 days.
Yeah, you know, if you really felt that way about a week, you just didn't go.
Okay.
You took that week off. But I always had a tough time with Riviera. I don't know why. As great a layout as it is, and because I didn't play well there, it's not in my top 10 or so, which is disrespectful to the golf course, really. But I really had a tough time at San Diego, for instance. Here they're shooting 63s and 4s every day, and I can't even break par, and I couldn't understand it. But that's San Diego was probably my number one. And I'll tell you one other was Disney.
Okay.
Was a tough one. But, you know, we all had, and that could be completely different than the next guy when you ask the question. But you're right. There's that golf course or two that you never could understand the scores. And then, you know, then you play well on a golf course like I played well at World Series a couple of times at Akron. There's no rhyme or reason I should ever play well there because it was so long and hard. But I happen to play well there a couple of times. See, it doesn't make sense. When you're playing well, you can play well anywhere.
Want to take a quick minute to let you know that hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. That's ZipRecruiter.com/clubhouse. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. And ZipRecruiter is so effective. Get this, 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. That's one day. That's wild. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/clubhouse. That's ZipRecruiter.com/clubhouse. ZipRecruiter.com/clubhouse. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. I also wanted to let you know about Robinhood, an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, cryptos, all commission-free. And while other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all your profits. Plus, there's no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. You can view easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections like 100 most popular and things like that. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio. You can discover new stocks, you can track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood has given listeners of the Clubhouse a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at clubhouse.robinhood.com. That's clubhouse.robinhood.com. All right, back to Curtis. Well, I wanted to ask you a question about the modern-day player and their approach to injuries, because we had two guys this past week do it completely different. You know, Tiger was battling a little bit of a neck injury and decided not to play an event he was scheduled to play in Bay Hill, and he didn't even make the start. Jason Day mentions after he withdraws on Thursday that he'd had neck injuries that had started the prior weekend. He goes out to give it a go, plays 6 or 7 holes and WDs, and when you do that, of course, you know, there's a spot that basically is left open for the week that somebody could have got in, an alternate could have got in. What's your thoughts on that? I mean, is that something that if you're in that position and you want to give it a go, you should have that opportunity? Or do you like what Tiger does when maybe he doesn't feel like he's got a chance to really compete, so why go out there and give it a go?
Well, we're both speculating right here, but I will say this. I played injured more than once, less than 25 times on tour, and you just go try to play. Don't ever tell me, somebody who did this for a long time, don't ever tell me that Jason took a spot away from an alternate when he really truly wanted to go try to play golf.
Right.
That's his prerogative. That's the competitiveness, competitor in him to go try, and it acted up. And he said, I can't go anymore, and you pull out. I never had to do something like that, but once I did. But that's his choice. So don't tell me the number one on the alternate list didn't get in from him. I don't really care. In Tiger's case, we don't know, because if he thought it was really going to aggravate him by playing, didn't pull out. Do what you think is right. And the players are doing what they think is right with their own bodies and their own competitive spirit and their schedule. Everybody's different. It seems like you pick those two, and they're the two that, gosh, they're so injury prone. And is it the weight room? Is it the practice? Is it hitting too many balls? In Tiger's case, it could be all of the above. Who knows? In Jason's case, it looks like he breaks down a lot. And, you know, there was some years ago that when Jason was just coming on the scene, I really thought Jason Day was going to be the next Tiger Woods. As far as record, maybe not quite that good, but I thought he was going to be the dominant player like DJ is, or like Brooks is, or like, Justin Thomas. I thought he was going to be the guy. He's so talented with so long, but he continues to, injure himself.
Right.
So there's been people like that over the years. He seems to be one. And it's disappointing for me as a fan, because that guy has so much talent. But maybe one day he'll get healthy. We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, when you think about what Jason Day did, I mean, he nearly won the Masters in this kind of like comeback affair back, I think it was 2011, and of course wins the PGA Championship. But, you know, I think Jason Day is one of those players that, you know, he has the length. You know, he kind of hits the ball, you know, sky high, and can do that around some of these firm and fast golf courses. But, you know, he's such an underrated putter. I mean, one of the best putters on the PGA Tour. I mean, when you combine all of those types of things, that would be how you would kind of cut together a professional golfer. So he's kind of the forgotten man in that list of players right now. I think he's 11th in the world. I mean, he's still finishing high. He's still winning occasionally. But I'm with you a little bit. I've been a bit surprised the fall off since he won the PGA Championship, because I thought when he did that, we were going to see Jason Day join, you know, Spieth and Rory in that 3, 4, 5 major win category. And it'll be interesting to see if he can get back there, because I think he does have the skills and the talent if he can stay healthy.
Well, he really has. And I've watched him play, you know, standing there, and he's incredible. And, you know, great, perfect body to play golf and fit and the whole thing. You know, he started having babies, and, you know, people react to fatherhood. By the way, congratulations on future fatherhood.
Thank you. I spent yesterday building a crib, and I didn't mess it up once, so I'm very happy with myself. A crib and a bookshelf. By the way, the bookshelf, as you know, when you're building stuff, the fear is always opening the box, like how many pieces is this going to be?
Oh, my gosh.
This bookshelf was like 4 pieces, and that's it. It took me about 12 minutes to do it. I like gave my wife a high five and said, thank you for that.
Your first diaper is going to take you longer than 12 minutes. Okay. But anyway, you know, people react to, you know, maybe injuries, babies at home, you don't want to leave. People react differently, and it's human nature, and it's a good thing. But maybe the edge isn't there. Who knows? I'd hate to think the edge isn't there, but we're getting a little older, that type thing. So I just think the world of his game. That's all I can say now, and hope for our sake, fans' sake, and golf sake that he gets it back. And like you said, he's still 11 in the world, and we say, what the hell's wrong with him?
Exactly.
But hope he really gets back and starts contending in the 4 majors.
All right, I want to ask you about social media. This is something that you've really adopted, and it's something you enjoy. I mean, I've been around you on the road, and you like the interactions. You like commenting. You like giving people praise when they win. I noticed you sent something to Molinari about, you know, the final round and how well he played, and congrats on keeping the momentum going. Why have you adapted it so, I guess, so quickly, and why is it something that you enjoy so much?
You know, I really do enjoy it, and for the simple reason, I think I'm given some people out there that are generous enough to follow me, some inside baseball. That's all I'm trying to give them. If they follow me, it's not going to be much other than something, maybe some pictures of Sam Snead swinging, and let's not forget how damn good he was, or Ben Hogan or Jack Nicklaus or Byron Nelson in 45 when he won all those tournaments. There are things that if I sit down there and watch Sam Snead swing two or three times, I'm thinking my golf followers might like that too. So I put it out there. Or, you know, just when I congratulate somebody, you know, just give them a blip of why what impressed me that week watching him on TV, or just whatever, just some inside baseball. I just love it. I mean, I don't love it. I do it because I feel like I should. But I enjoy it, and, you know, stay away from the politics and religion. I did tweet out my only political tweet here over the holidays, and it was not good. It was not good. So it will be my first and last.
That's one of those where you go, I'll just delete this one. And
I had to test the waters, and I got called some names, and I said, Ash, enough. I won't do that again.
You know, I liked a tweet. You know, this is not even my tweet. I liked a tweet about 6 months ago that had a little bit of politics in it. And I got people yelling at me about that. I mean, it wasn't even my tweet. It wasn't even my words. I just liked something. And some guys said, oh, this popped up in my feed. Why are you doing this? And it's one of those things you said. You go, you know what? I did it once. That's enough. This is never again. I'm going to talk about golf and sports.
Don't I have the right to have an opinion? And if that opinion about golf might bleed over into whatever, you know what? It's okay. You know, it's okay. So I stay away from it.
Yes.
I'm trying to give them some inside baseball that they're not going to get anywhere else. And I stick to that, and I've enjoyed that. Yes.
I think that's the way to do it. Your follow is @golf_strange, by the way, if people want to follow Curtis Strange on Twitter. And hey, do it. He's a lot of fun. He's a good follow, and he'll interact with you. So it's like a major champion interacting with everybody at home, just hanging out. I just wanted to ask you a quick question about Pebble Beach. And as we near the U.S. Open there, we all get a chance to watch Pebble Beach yearly. Just give people an idea of the difference of Pebble Beach at a U.S. Open and Pebble Beach during the Pro-Am.
Wow. Same golf course. Might use one or two back tees that ordinarily they don't use in the AT&T. 9 and 10 have new back tees that we saw in the U.S. Amateur last year. That real back tee at 17 that plays 230 or so, they'll use that, which they don't play in the AT&T. But more than anything else, they narrow the fairways. I hope they narrow the fairways. We just don't know until we get there.
Right.
Ordinarily, they narrow the fairways and grow plenty of rough and try to get the greens as hard and fast as they can. And that's a normal U.S. Open setup, or used to be. You got to be careful with Pebble Beach because the greens are so small and have quite a bit of slope. So speed can hurt you, and being too firm can hurt you. As I said earlier, you got to give the players a chance. They're the best players in the world, but you still have to give them a chance to play. And, you know, at times at Pebble Beach have been really, really hard, but you know, you have to defend the golf course a little bit, and it is the U.S. Open. It should be the toughest test. I just haven't been a huge fan of, you know, some of the recent setups. And it's not because of – well, it is because of controversy. I just want to let Pebble Beach be the star, let Shinnecock, you know, be the star, let the great venues be the star along with the best players in the world. Pebble Beach, you don't have to do much to, though. It's a wonderful place. It's iconic. It's we at Fox, you and I can't wait to go and televise the U.S. Open there. And it's the greatest event that I can ever play in. So I look forward to it every year. But Pebble was really a cool place to go play the Open.
Curtis, when you've been in the booth before, obviously, and you now are on the ground a lot for us. Which one do you like more?
Which I truly have embraced and like, by the way.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, like, which one do you prefer or like more, and why is being on the ground so much fun for you these days at these U.S. Opens?
Well, mainly because I'm just talking golf, and I don't mean that in any way other than I'm talking about the shot at that moment for that player and trying to give them something that they can't see or feel through the TV screen. That's tough to do because sometimes it's a straight-up 7-iron from 175 yards. No wind, sun's out, perfect lie, perfect green. What else do you say? You know, it's sometimes it's like playing at a dome. So there's not a lot, you know, to me, my job on the ground gets more specific and more important when the guy is in trouble. What type of lie, what type of shot, what type of, you know, chance, that type of stuff. Now the booth is a different animal. We're going to have Paul Azinger work with us again, although he's, you know, with NBC now and doing a great job. But when you're in the booth or in a hole announcer, you're, you know, got to have an anecdote about somebody, a little tidbit about somebody once in a while, a little nugget, a little story, and set up the hole and then set up the on-course. So it's a little different animal, but I've enjoyed all of them. But I like being out there in the middle of the in the middle of the game. I really enjoyed that, and I really, really was honored and enjoyed being with Brooks Koepka last year at when he won back to back.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you were right there to congratulate him doing something that you did the last to do it. Last thing, I just watched Losers on Netflix, Curtis, and of course, I get to see your face unexpectedly talking about Vandeveld. Now, 20 years later, you were in the booth with Tirico talking a little bit about broadcasting, and all I could think as I'm watching this, I mean, I've seen and read, you know, 50 things about Vandeveld over the years, but I was very interested. You said a great line. You said, "We didn't say much because there was nothing much to say." And I was thinking, you know, people don't know when things like this are happening, and this is obviously one of the rarest things ever in golf, is I could only imagine the looks between you and Mike back and forth as he's pulling 2-iron and taking his shoes off. What was it like in the booth during that whole thing?
Wow, we weren't even looking at the monitors. Our booth is halfway down 18, so we were standing up, looking over top the monitors, looking out the window as Rossi and Mike and I were talking. And it was... To televise and to chronicle controversy or a disaster like that is very, very tough to do, because you want to give it the justice. You want to give it the analyst as somebody who's been there and done that and screwed up. But you don't want to be mean-spirited, but you have to tell the viewer what is really going on here. And, you know, in controversy, it's not easy. The thing that comes to mind is Dustin Johnson at Oakmont, you know, 3 years ago or so when he won. But in Vandeveld's case, it was the wildest thing I've ever had to try to talk about. And I don't want to talk about it like I'm sitting at the bar or home talking to friends, because you would be brutal and mean-spirited. But you're trying to give inside baseball to the viewers out there. And what came out of my mouth after watching, you got to remember, this thing took 40 minutes to play the hole. But I finally hit my talk back to my producer. And can I say this? He said, "Go now." So when he's standing in the water, I said, "This is the most stupid thing I've ever seen in my life." And I stand by that comment to this day. I didn't call Jean stupid. I like the man. He's handled that spectacularly as a gentleman.
Right.
If that's but I had to tell the viewer and the listener what I would thought as somebody who has been there, won tournaments and lost tournaments, and it was to this day, it was because you had a chance to think about every shot and he chose poorly on every shot and he lost the Open. And you hate, as a competitor, I don't want to see anybody ever lose a golf tournament. I want to see him win a golf tournament. When you don't do well come down the stretch, it's hard for us to call. But in that case, it's my defining moment in TV. And Tirico and I were just flabbergasted. And it was, and Rossi was phenomenal on the ground. I felt for him, but I had to do my job.
Absolutely. And again, I said this on Twitter, you guys were so good at that moment, because it's, again, that is so hard. It's so easy to be waxing poetically about Jordan Spieth walking up the 18th fairway at Chambers Bay to win the U.S. Open. That, and I don't want to say easy, but that is the part of the job that you're prepared for. You're not prepared for a guy to make seven on the last hole with a 3-shot lead. So I thought you guys crushed it. If you haven't seen it, Losers on Netflix, absolutely worth your time.
Well, it's a 12-part series on different people and teams that have lost. I hate the title Losers, because none of these people are losers, or we wouldn't be talking about them. They were great champions after they lost a dramatic event. I'll tell you one other example was our first year at Fox out at Chambers Bay. You talk Chambers Bay to chronicle and talk about Dustin Johnson three putting from 15 feet on the last hole is very, very difficult. And I think Greg Norman found that out on live TV. It's tough to do, but you have to put yourself in his shoes. And as somebody who's, again, been there and done that in Greg Norman's case, not picking on Greg, it's tough to do, but you have to give him some inside baseball on what just happened here. And I just think the job is tougher than people think it is. And it's, you know, because you do it all the time, but it's not easy. And to try to get it from my brain out my mouth sometimes is the toughest thing I ever do.
Right. Without getting fired. That's the key. You know, that's
without getting fired. Yes. Yeah.
And that's the Johnny Miller thing. You know, that is why I think there was, and I don't want to say, you know, Johnny Miller was a controversial figure because he was one of the best of all time, but what he did was he spoke of the moment, not the player. And I think a lot of the time people think he spoke of the player, not the moment. He wasn't saying this player is doing this. He's saying we are watching this happen. And I think that is, again, the best players in the world have choked. I mean, Tiger Woods missed a very makeable putt against Y.A. Yang that we've never really seen him miss before. And that was either, you know, a bad read, a bad putt, or he was in his own head. And, I mean, that happens. It happens to the greats. It happened to Jack. It happened to Arnie. I mean, I'm sure it happened to you at times.
Exactly.
And it's happened to everybody. So it's not knocking the person that's doing it.
I just hate the word choke because it's so negative. But we've all not handled pressure. There's an enormous amount of pressure coming down the last nine holes of a golf tournament. And then you put it tenfold in a major championship. But when you're young, you're going to not do well because you've never experienced it. And once you experience it once or twice or three times, now you learn. That's when you learn how to play the game, is how your body reacts when it's uncomfortable on that stage. And choke's the wrong word. It's just learning how to play this game at the highest level. And it's not just a golf. It's every sport and every business. People choke in the business room or the conference room.
Right.
When you get nervous and sometimes you don't think properly, you don't react properly. So I just don't like the word choke, but you better learn from it because it's not going to get any easier. Hell, I choke on TV. Are you kidding me? Like I said, from brain to mouth, sometimes it doesn't relate.
Just not always rolls right off the tongue. I understand. I've been there as well. Curtis, I appreciate you taking the time. Like I said, I know you you want to. What are we fishing for today when you get off the line?
We're a little snook fishing today. Yeah, just, you know, enjoying the 83-degree weather today down here in Florida.
Yeah, get a little fishing in before the player starts. I appreciate it. Curtis Strange, of course, follow him at golf_Strange on Twitter, and you will see him a part of all of our Fox coverage throughout the summer, so make sure you get ready to tune into that. It'll be a lot of fun. Big USGA venues we got in 2019. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Shane. Good talk to you.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
A big thanks to Curtis Strange for jumping on the podcast. Always love having his insight and his general honesty. Love the honesty from Curtis Strange. He's one of the best. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at golf_Strange. He is a great follow. He'll talk about things happening on the golf course, and he doesn't really hold back. I know that's no surprise from a man like Curtis Strange, and he's a great follow, so make sure you do that. A big shout-out to Titleist and the new Vokey Wedges and the new yellow Pro V1X. Don't forget about the new yellow golf ball. Trust me, you're going to see it everywhere. Be one of the first to do that. It's out in March. You can get it now, so check that out, the Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Thanks to ZipRecruiter and Robinhood. Make sure you go to those distinctive and exclusive web addresses to check out all that they offer. And we will be back next week with more Clubhouse Podcast. If you get a chance to get out early over the weekend and play golf, then you can hunker down and watch the players.